I called the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is
4-1. I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Tempe.
Yo! And welcome back to the Fit Sports Podcast with just the realest. Black is the funniest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the side, going down. Audio shop talk going right to your ear hole, brought to you by yours truly, Joseph Ward, a.k.a. your mother's boyfriend, that dude that be in the kitchen butt naked cooking breakfast. When you come out in the morning and you see that dude be in the kitchen, you be like, ah, that dude in the kitchen. Yeah, because I just got through drilling your mother last night. That's me, Joseph Ward, bringing this audio shop talk. You know, talking about the way we talk about sports, but we'll put some sense to it from a black perspective, a comedic perspective, and a realistic perspective on everything sports. No sports is off limits, and no topics is off limits. Why? Because shit, we own this shit. We ain't got no restrictions, B. Ain't nobody telling us what we can and can't talk about, B. But if this your first time tuning in to the Fix Sports Podcast, welcome, welcome, welcome. Like I said, I am Joseph Ward, the multi-talented man in the land that's bringing it to you from here to Pakistan, you heard me? Hey, man, this is episode 17 of the Fix Sports Podcast. I want to give a shout-out again to my homie Bruce Fennell for coming through last week, being my guest on the Fix Sports Podcast. Remember to check out episode 16. Season 5, episode 16, part 2, as I interview Bruce Fennell. But also check out part 1. Where I go in, I feel like the full show was a rant talking about this crazy stuff that's going on in the nation, because we out here fighting the power one time for these protests. Give them hell, give them hell, give them hell. Just need to make sure we got the right direction with these protests, you heard me? Hey, man, all my community workers, I want to give a shout-out to everybody in the community that been in the community, that is in the community, that's put me in work. Shout-out to you all. You are not overlooked here at the Fix Sports Podcast on the Freedom Train Network, because we know what it is. Why? Because we grassroots workers ourselves. So we know it ain't all about the stuff that's on TV. The real work usually be happening off camera. So shout out to everybody who out there putting in work in their communities on a regular basis. You are definitely appreciated. Man, it's been some things happening in the wide world of sports. We are slowly going to return back to sports. But in the midst of that, we still have these protests going on, the Black Lives Matter protests. I hope it's still about Black Lives Matter. But police are still killing innocent black men. That a young man who was found hanging from a tree in California. Police killed the black man in Atlanta the other day. Yeah, the projects got shot up here in Tallahassee. There's a lot of stuff still going on. But I'm still holding motherfuckers to the fight. Racism is something that's very adaptable. You gotta understand that. System of racism is very adaptable. So I hear all these corporations saying the right things and throwing money around. But I'm saying, if you're not working to end the system of white supremacy, if everything you're doing, if you claim to be against it, but everything you're doing is not working to end the system of white supremacy and racism, you're full of shit, and all you're doing is working to adapt. Because right now, what I see, the way I see it is, racism is about to go covert again. It's about to go back underground. And shit gonna be happening, but it ain't gonna be as blatant. So, that's just me. That's just me. Hey, man, so remember, the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by Owns and Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go. The stories of the sung and unsung heroes of the African diaspora. People who we may learn about some of the times, or people who we may not learn about at all. On the Shoulders of Giants, go find these stories and put these stories in one place. And it's separated by continent, North America, Central America, South America, Oceania, Africa, Europe. All these different places we find historical and contemporary heroes of the African diaspora who have created their platforms and structured their lives around the upliftment, empowerment, and freeing their people from the throes of white supremacy. And that's what On the Shoulders of Giants does, brings these stories of the real superheroes of the world, the real superheroes of the African diaspora. Website is www.ontheshouldersone.com. And they bring these stories through the On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the On the Shoulders of Giants blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app, which is available on the website at www.ontheshouldersone.com, the On the Shoulders of Giants online course, which is available on Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG, the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization. And of course, COVID is going on now, but you can still book On the Shoulders of Giants, On the Shoulders of Giants for educational sessions. The information is available on smart boards, smart TVs, smartphones, computers, laptops, tablets, wherever you can receive your information, whether it's digital, face-to-face. All you got to do is visit www.ontheshouldersone.com. Where we got all the information you need. They got all the information you need. African history at your fingertips. Bounce, wow, wow. Really going down in the side. All right, man. So we got some topics and some things we're going to get into today. I don't have an HBCU spotlight, but I'm going to play my music anyway. You heard me? But I do got some HBCU news to talk about. So there's a basketball player named Trace Young who picks Alabama State over six HBCUs, and I believe this is the young man. He transferred from Wyoming to come to Alabama State. So talk about that. Alcorn State and football, Alcorn State lands Vanderbilt wide receiver C.J. Bowler, and Bowler is a bowler too. So he's transferred to Alcorn State. And then there's the conversation around a 15-year-old basketball player named Mikey Williams, who expressed interest in going and possibly going to HBCU when it's time for him to go to college. And so that sparked sparked some debate within the black community and other communities about black players going to black colleges, and some ignorant people think that's racist. It's not racist for white people to recruit white players to go to white colleges to help build up white colleges. That's not racist. But what is racist is black schools recruiting black players to help build up black colleges. Somehow that's racist. I don't know. All right, so sad news. One of my favorite football players, wide receivers, growing up watching up, Rishay Caldwell, he was unfortunately murdered this past week in Tampa. They were going to give him his respect and his flowers and his moment of silence. Fat Buck Face, Jason Whitlock, is no longer with Fox Sports. And we're going to celebrate like a motherfucker. Hopefully he don't show up nowhere else. But I know he will. So the Hornets, Knights, and Panthers all joined up to end ties with CPI Security over racist remarks by the CEO of CPI Security. Oh, shit. DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watkins, and other former Clemson players, they team up to support the removal of John Calhoun's name at Clemson, and it has to have some racist history into that. And speaking of Clemson, that coach Dabo Sweeney is in hot water for defending a coach who used the word nigga. And I'm going to give you the whole context now, then we get to the story. The coach shouldn't have said it, and Dabo doing his best to tap dance around these things. And I'm going to call out Dabo, because Dabo support white supremacy. Let's just face it. And a lot of times people like to say that people who support white supremacy or do some white supremacy shit ain't racist. Fuck that. Right? Fuck that. And so my weekly rant is going at former NASCAR truck driver, racist, really non-winning ass, for quitting, for retiring or quitting from NASCAR because NASCAR decided not to fly the Confederate flag anymore. So puss-ass racist really decide he don't want to be part of NASCAR no more. I'm going to give y'all some of his weak-ass stats that he got, too. So, I mean, these are some of the things that we are going to cover in today's episode. Remember, Season 5, Episode 17, Fix Sports Podcast, brought to you right here on the Freedom Train Network, which is www.freedomtrainradio.com, man. So if all hearts and minds are clear, man, let's go do this thing. Get that thing. You feel it now, I don't have a HBCU spotlight per se, but I got some HBCU news, and I just want to play my music, so I play my music. So, HBCU news. Trace Young picks Alabama State over six HBCUs. So, Tuesday was a big day for Alabama State basketball. Hours after announcing former NBA All-Star Mo Williams, who played with LeBron James in Cleveland, as his basketball coach, ASU picked up a big piece for its new coach. Trace Young, a former Wyoming player and three-star recruit, announced he will be transferring to ASU on Fox Sports Radio Wednesday night. Yay, yay! So the 6'9" from Kentucky turned heads in April when he announced he was focusing his prospects on HBCUs only. Last week, he named three from the MEAC, North Carolina A&T, Howard, and Norfolk State, along with Mississippi Valley State, Prairie View, and Jackson State. Alabama State wasn't on his list at the time, but apparently it crept up on the top. ASU went 8-24 last season and hasn't won more than nine games since 2016. That shit might change if Trace Young is actually good. So, Young averaged 6.8 points and 3.4 rebounds per game in his long season there before transferring. He spent last season at John A. Logan College in Illinois. Okay. So I hope you ball out, bro. I hope you ball out, Trace Young. I hope you go to Arizona State and ball out. But also, what I'm constructing here in this HBCU news segment is I'm using my powers to create momentum, to create conversation, idea, and momentum around black players playing ball at black schools. Let's say it. Black players playing ball at black schools. Say it with me now. I said black players playing ball at black schools. Hey, they may not play where you want them, but they're playing right on time. I said even on time player at a black school. So hope that's my goal, to continue to put in the minds of people, continue furthering the conversation about, and having conversations spur action where top black high school recruits are actually playing ball at HBCUs and increasing the revenue and increasing the profile and everything with the HBCUs. Because I got into a conversation with a young lady earlier this week about the black players going to HBCUs, and my argument was, well, her thing was, we need money to bring these recruits to the school. And my question was, where the money coming from? And her argument was, well, if HBCUs handled the money better, there would be more money for the people to have. And I get the argument. I get the argument. But proper money management still would not be able to bridge the gap between HBCUs and PWIs as far as when it talks about money. A PWI can pay a player $100,000 under the table because they have it. A PWI has the top facilities because they have the money, and that money comes from the players. So remember, these PWIs had to build somewhere, and the build-up was these players. These players brought in this money. So same with HBCUs. First couple class of HBCU players going to have to sacrifice top-notch facilities. They're going to have to sacrifice. Come to the HBCUs, ball out, win, have the cameras follow you, have more dollars follow you. That's going to build it up for the next class and the next class and the next class and the next class. It's a process. But the HBCUs now, at this point, even if they manage their money correctly, do not have the funds to increase facilities before they bring the players there. And even they can increase facilities all they want. They're not going to bring the players there because one of the main things that bring the players to the school is the ability to go pro. So HBCU, top college prospect, top high school prospects, come out of high school, go to HBCUs, ball out, win, go pro, money. That's how I go. So I'm for it. So Trace Young, I see you. So in football, Alcorn State gets former Vanderbilt wide receiver C.J. Bowler. So Alcorn State's high-powered offense has landed a commitment from a big-time talent. I ain't going to say Vanderbilt big-time talent, but C.J. Bowler is. So after two seasons with the Vanderbilt Commodores, wide receiver C.J. Bowler announced on June 5th that he has decided to finish the remainder of his collegiate career with the Alcorn State Braves. And this is a tweet from or Instagram post from Bowler. I'm thankful for the amazing people I met at Vanderbilt University, from my teammates to the coaches to the lifelong friends I made on campus. I cannot express how much I am grateful for them. I decided to spend the remainder of my college career, of my collegiate career, at Alcorn State University. I am excited for what the future holds, and I cannot wait to be a part of this legendary program. Yay, yay! Okay, in addition, the addition of the 6'1", 190-pound bowler is huge for the Braves' already dominant offense. The Braves lost wide receivers Chris Blair and Ra'Darius Anderson to graduation, so Bowler is slated to come in and make an immediate impact. Bowler is a bowler. As a senior at Purvis High School in Purvis, Mississippi, Bowler had 45 receptions, 896 yards, and 11 touchdowns. As a freshman at Vanderbilt, Bowler racked up 34 receptions for 440 yards and 2 touchdowns. Though plagued with injuries in his sophomore season, Bowler returned to his home state of Mississippi to look to shake up the swag. The commitment from Bowler is especially lethal to pairing with regaining SWAC. Okay, I fucked that up. All right. So the commitment from Bowler is an especially lethal to the pairing with the reigning SWAC Offensive Player of the Year, Phoenix Harper. Harper led the Alcorn offense by throwing for 2,954 yards, 33 touchdowns, and 6 rushing touchdowns. The Braves hope that new dynamic duo has them headed for another Celebration Bowl appearance. Alcorn State kicks off its season on September 5th against the Auburn Tigers. So that's what's happening with that. That's HBCU news on Alcorn State. And so, like I said, that leads us to a lot of the conversation that's been had last year around Mikey Williams, the 15-year-old basketball standout who has stated that he plans on attending the HBCU, or he's thinking about attending the HBCU. And once again, furthering that conversation of top black high school recruits going to HBCU. So Mike Williams is one of the nation's best 15-year-old basketball players. Sent shockwaves through the sports world when he tweeted that he might go to an HBCU. So they say a researcher named Jamie Harris, who studies student athletes, elaborates on why Williams' potential decision is generating so much interest. And so these are his points on why this decision is generating interest. So the first one is, what's the big deal? There's a lot of money at stake. Before he became an NBA star, Zion Williamson, was worth an estimated $5 million per year for Duke University. That figure is based on media exposure, marketing deals, and ticket sales. Williamson is not unique. Many a college sports star have made a lot of money for their college. Convincing a talented high school player to commit to a particular school is one of the most critical aspects of recruitment. A star player can help a school generate lots of revenue and expand their sports program. This is why I believe that college sports programs are more like businesses than part of the school, which is true. HBCUs are historically underfunded. For that reason, HBCUs can recruit as competitively as some of their Division I peers without the funds to build, or they can't recruit as competitively as their D1 peers. Without the funds to build programs and modern facilities capable to showcase star players in their quest to go pro, HBCUs are unlikely landing spots for their country's most talented student athletes, right? So when HBCUs can't attract the best young players, they miss out on the largest shares of HBCU revenue they could get from televised games, March Madness tournament participation, and apparel and ticket sales. And HBCU has never won an NCAA national championship in football or men's basketball. Well, FAMU did win. FAMU has won, but they didn't really count it, right? Instead, HBCUs compete in their own championship tournaments for the semi-segregated Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference and Southwestern Athletic Conference. One player may not change the entire system, but one player can make a big difference for an individual school. The second point is there anything special about this time? So the convergence of increased discontent regarding the COVID-19 pandemic, news coverage of videos that show the killing of George Floyd and many others at the hand of police, and the persistence of racist rhetoric has created a perfect storm to re-envision which college a young black student should choose. College men's basketball teams made up of 56% black players. Student athletes, not only about half of those athletes graduate from college after 6 years, in some cases that number is well below 50%. Less than 2% will be drafted into professional leagues. I'm just fucking making up words as I read. These are black kids who are grappling in real time with their own racial identity, their place in social hierarchy, and the system disadvantages of race in the U.S. As the NCAA tries to maintain institutional status quo, where student athletes are prevented from being paid for sports participation while players advocate for their right to generate their own revenue, black student athletes like Williams are recognizing their role in the financial health of the schools for which they choose to play. As Williams stated on Instagram, we are the reason that these schools have such big names and such good history. But in the end, what do we get out of it? Nothing. Committing to play for an HBCU isn't just a neutral short-term decision in this case. The potential for change instigated as a result of a top player rejecting a predominantly white school in favor of HBCU is particularly significant, specifically in 2020 as black colleges struggle to stay afloat, but also more possible than ever. So his third point is, can just one player shake things up? In the short term, probably not. However, Williams has the potential to influence other players in the future, and that may be more important. Colleges and universities depend heavily on revenue for men's basketball and football games to maintain stable operating budgets across the entire institution. The COVID-19 pandemic has exposed how precarious the financial relationship is between sports and Division I programs. Fortifying 2020 revenue means these schools will have even thinner margins and reduced budgets in the years immediately after the pandemic. So, black players are needed. Black players need to make sure that, black schools are needed and black players are needed. We cannot continue to talk about building black America, and we continue to send our top talent to white schools, whether it's athletically or academically. This top talent should be used to build up our communities and our schools. We understand the idea of white schools are better, but white schools aren't better. They just have access to more resources. And those resources allowed them to be able to grab those that top black talent and bring them to HBCU and bring them to PWI. So all I'm continuing to do is use my platform to push black players, top black recruits going to black schools. And that's what should be happening. So Trace Young, Michael Williamson, and CJ Bowler. Hey man, y'all do y'all thing. Y'all do y'all thing. And that there is my HBCU. You don't know me. And then listen to me like that. And that's my HBCU news. That is my HBCU news. So I'll move this thing on, moving on like Maya. I'll be moving on. So, in sad news, an ex-NFL player, ex-Florida Gator, Rishay Caldwell, shot dead in Tampa this past week. Former NFL wide receiver Rishay Caldwell, who started at Jefferson High and the University of Florida, was shot and killed late Saturday evening in Tampa. His mother said Sunday Caldwell was 41. Tampa police said officers responded to a call about a shooting just before 11 p.m. They found a man in his 40s with a gunshot wound in the yard of his home at the 3600 block of East Hannah Ave. Officers rendered aid before a fire rescue crew took the man to a hospital where he was pronounced dead. They said the incident does not appear to be a random act. Police did not identify the victim publicly, but Caldwell's mother, Deborah, said they broke the news to her around 11:30. She said her son had been heading to a concert at Whiskey North in Carrollwood, and the police told her they believed he was ambushed in a possible robbery attempt. He was set up, Deborah Caldwell said. I'm going to follow it all the way to the end. You get killed right here in your own hometown. You made a statement here, and y'all just took it away from us. Caldwell starred in baseball and football at Jefferson High School, which is why the Tampa Tribune named him the Aires number 67 athlete of the century in the fall of 1999. At the time, Dragons baseball coach Pop Cuesta said Caldwell was as good as any player who went through its program. A list that includes major league stars such as Tino Martinez, Fred McGriff, and Luis Gonzalez. Caldwell set Jefferson career records in batting average with 379 doubles, with 25 triples, 6 steals, 67 runs, 76. It's a shame, Cuesta said on Sunday. He's probably one of the best athletes I've ever coached. He was a tremendous athlete. I mean, he had it all. If he had decided to go baseball, he would have played in the big leagues. There's no question about it. I'm sure he was a great person as well, Coach. I'm sure of that. I'm sure he was a great person, too. Even though Caldwell, whose first name is pronounced Rishay, was drafted by the Cincinnati Reds in 1998, his future was in football. He passed for 77 touchdowns and almost 7,000 yards as a quarterback, tailback, and punter at Jefferson. A tailback as a Dragons freshman, he fumbled on his first carry against Auburndale in a one-quarter district tiebreaker to determine the playoff berth. But on the second carry, he ran for a 73-yard touchdown. Jefferson prevailed and made the playoffs. The next year, he embarked on a legendary career as a quarterback, guiding the Dragons to a Class 5A state semifinals in 1996 and being named the state's 5A player of the year that same season. I always told him, out of all my years of coaching, that was the best athlete I ever coached, former Dragons offensive coordinator Harry Hubbard said. He had it all, so we moved him to quarterback because we said at least he could have it in his hands every play. Former Dragons football coach Darlie Nelson said Caldwell nearly signed with Michigan State, then coached by current Alabama coach Nick Saban as a quarterback before opting for the University of Florida. If we push time forward, we think about what Rishay did as a high school quarterback, he's today's quarterback right now. So Richey was a baller, man. Balled out at Florida, balled out for the Patriots and everything, man. So let's give him a moment of silence for the late Richey Caldwell. So just note, he was drafted by the Chargers in 2002. He spent six seasons in the league. His best season came with New England in 2006. They got to the AFC Championship. So, balled out of Florida too, man. So, rest in peace, Richey Caldwell. Rest in peace, my brother. All right. The fat fuck has fallen. Fortunately, the fat fuck has fallen fast. Furthering fortunes for those who don't give a fuck. See how I do that? But Jason Whitlock, fat fuck Jason Whitlock, is not at Fox Sports anymore. Bennett says contract is up, but we don't give a fuck. Fuck Jason Whitlock. Say fuck Jason Whitlock. Say fuck Jason Whitlock. Right? So according to a report from Outkick, the coverage, Jason Whitlock would no longer be working for Fox Sports One. Note that for the past 4 years, he has been the host on the talk show Speak for Yourself, and he's been up there selling out with the white gloves on, selling out. I love white people. So, Quick the Courage reports that the contract expired on Sunday, and both he and Fox Sports One were unable to come to an agreement on a new deal. Suspicions that led to this discovery were raised in the 21st Century manner. First, Whitlock didn't appear on the show on Monday. Then it was learned that his name wasn't in the guy info for any episode being filmed over the next 2 weeks. He also was taken off the Avatar, and that's all. It left a lot of room on the Avatar taking him off. So Whitlock had worked with the network since 2016, though his relationship with Fox's sports brands date back even earlier to when he worked for the original Fox Sports for a stretch that lasted from 2007 to 2013. In between those stints, he had worked for ESPN. Things did not go well there because they found that he was a fat sellout. Whitlock is yet to give a detailed public comment on the departure. As for Fox Sports One, they made the following brief statement. It says, Friday was Jason Whitlock's last day with Fox Sports. We thank Jason for all of his hard work and selling out and dedication and selling out to the network, and we wish him the best in his sellout endeavor. Basically the world of sports is, especially people who watch sports, we are excited to know that we're one sellout short to have to watch on TV. Because Whitlock was the ultimate sellout. Whitlock went out of his way to spew racist talking points and to spew hate and to support white supremacy. Yes, Jason Whitlock went out of his fat fucking way to be a sellout, and not understanding that white supremacists discard their pets when they no longer need them. So when they no longer need you, when your services are no longer needed, they throw your fat ass away. So the contract was up, Jason is gone. So hopefully we don't hear from his sellout ass again. But in today's climate, you can start your own shit. So I'm sure we will hear from his racist sellout ass again. Well, Jason is not racist. He just supports white supremacy because he feels that's in his own film, that's nature. He's the token Negro that white people point to and say, see, I told you some black people support this. So Jason Whitlock, he does that. And so he a bitch. His father should have pulled out. His mother should have swallowed. And he should never exist. Jason Whitlock should have been washed out. Should have been in a sock, soaking in the fabrics in the sock. And either just left to crust or washed out in the washing machine. But unfortunately, it became a human being. And decided that selling out is the way to be. So, Jason Whitlock, we wish you a big fuck you on the rest of your career. All right. So, The Charlotte Hornets, Charlotte Knights, and the Carolina Panthers join forces to end ties with CPI security over racist remarks from their CEO. Because everybody trying to act like they down with black people. But we going to see it still early, so we still going to see. I'm side-eyeing the hell out of everybody who act like they down with us. But we going to see, though. If you ain't, but what I always say, at the end of the day, if you're not working to break down the system of white supremacy and racism, and end it, because we got to start this thing back over, equal redistribution of wealth, resources, and everything. If you ain't willing to do that, you ain't serious about ending racism. Just not just in the actions, but the advantages as well, and the privileges. Charlotte Hornets and Charlotte Knights have joined the Carolina Panthers in severing ties with CPI security in wake of controversial comments its CEO made regarding local George Floyd protests. Our chairman, Michael Jordan, has been very clear about his thoughts surrounding the issues of racial inequity, social justice, and diversity, the Hornets said in the statement. We believe it is appropriate at this time to end our partnership with CPI. The Minor League Baseball Knights said it will end sponsorship with branding ties to CPI, adding, "We stand with those in our community and across the country who are working to effect change to bring an end to racism and discrimination." And just remember, if you're going to end racism, you got to start this bitch off. The CPI controversy centered on CPI CEO Ken Gill's response to a mass email sent out by a local nonprofit, Queen City Unity, which called for action in response to killing of black people like George Floyd by Minneapolis police. "Please spend your time in a more productive way," Gill responded in an email, which Queen City Unity leader George Millers posted on Facebook. "A better use of time would be to focus on black-on-black crime, essentially killing of our young men by other young men." Gail later apologized for his comments. Nah, bitch, don't apologize. Don't apologize because the backlash came back the way you didn't want it to. When people bring up black-on-black crime, well, why white people never spend time on white-on-white crime? Why don't white people spend time eradicating white-on-white crime when most of the time, most white people are killed by white people, when over 80% of white people are killed by white people? Black-on-black crime is a deflective propaganda tool used to get people away from speaking the truth. Don't fall for that shit. People who talk about white-on-white crime can suck my dick. I mean, people who use black-on-black crime as a way to deflect from racism can suck my dick. That's what I'm saying. White-on-white crime, black-on-black crime is just as real as white-on-white crime. And black-on-black crime is just as much of a non-issue as white-on-white crime. So, Gil, you can suck my dick. The athletic programs at NC State and South Carolina also announced Sunday via Twitter that they were ending superior sponsor relationship with CPR Security. I pressed some shit. The Panthers announced late Sunday that they were ending their longtime sponsor relationship with CPI response to Gibbs' comments. In a statement, the Panthers said late Saturday, we said we're committed to doing our part, and we mean it. CPI has been a long-term partner, but upon reflection, we feel that it is right to end our relationship. We have informed Mr. Gill of our decision tonight. See, Gill is only sorry because of the actual backlash and the consequences that's come for this. He ain't sorry because he said that shit. He don't really apologize. He don't really feel sorry for saying that shit, because he meant what he said. CPI has been one of the Panthers' closest local partners for many years, featuring recently retired star linebacker Luke Kuechly in frequent commercials. Michael Jordan addressed racism. Jordan spoke passionately Friday in an exclusive interview with the Overseer about ingrained racism. Jordan and the Nike division that bears his name, Jordan Brand, have pledged $100 million over the next 10 years to support groups pursuing social justice issues, and I hope they find these grassroots groups as well. But remember, just throwing money around don't end racism. Just throwing money around and giving money to organizations, even if you give money to the right organization, that don't end racism. White people have to actively end racism, denounce racism, give up their white privilege, give up their advantages, give up all those things, and have an equal redistribution of wealth, resources, and all the things that make America, America. If you're not going to do that, then you're bullshit. Jordan said the death of African American, I don't know why they say it like that. Jordan said the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis when a white policeman kneeled on his neck for more than 8 minutes. And Floyd said he couldn't breathe has become a tipping point in not tolerating racism and brutality toward people of color. Tipping point my ass. Bitch, the tipping point been happened. Some of y'all full of shit, man. The tipping point been happened. You don't have to wait till a cop put his knee on the motherfucker's neck to say, hey, well, maybe we should do some other shit. Some of y'all late to the party and we fucking calling you white. These issues been here forever. Fucking tipping point. Bitch, fucking slavery happened. Y'all talking about tipping point. How about get the tip? How about get the tip, the point, the tip of my dick to point down your throat? How about that? So that's what's going on in Charlotte. So the Hornets, the Knights, and the Panthers say fuck you to CPI Security because the CEO, what's his fuckboy name? Ken Gill says, well, we shouldn't focus on police killings and focus on black on black crime. All right. And we should focus on doing business with you. We should focus on doing business with somebody else. That's what they said, yo ass. That's why your bitch ass apologized. Hey, can't give. Suck my dick. That's all I got to say about that. So, staying in the Carolinas, these next two are going to be in the Carolinas. So, we're going to Clemson, South Carolina, where DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watkins, and others are leading the charge to remove a racist statue of John Calhoun from Clemson University. Former Clemson players DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watkins are petitioning the university to remove the name of John C. Calhoun from the school's honors college, with Hopkins noting that the slave owner's influence is the reason he does not mention the university's name when he's introduced before NFL games. And I'm going to read that again. Former Clemson players DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watkins are petitioning the university to remove the name of John C. Calhoun from the school's honors college, with Hopkins noting that the slave owner's influence is the reason he does not mention the university's name when he's introduced before games. But you still went to the school and you still stayed there. Okay. Calhoun, who served as the vice president under John Quincy Adams from 1825 to 1829, advocated for slavery, saying it was a positive good. The Clemson campus is built on Calhoun's Fort Hill plantation, where, according to his bio on the school's website, he enslaved 70 to 80 African Americans. And you still have pride in the school. So, I felt this oppressive figure during my time at Clemson and purposely did not mention the university's name before NFL games because of it, but you stayed at the school, though. Hopkins wrote on Instagram, I am joining the voices of the students and faculty who have restarted this petition to rename the Calhoun's Honors College. I urge all Clemson students, football players, and alumni to join us so the next generation of young black leaders can be proud of the institution they graduate from. Now is the time for change. So I'm about to read you. An Instagram post from DeAndre Hopkins. So as we watch everything happening in the world, I want to bring up something that has been bothering me for a long time in my community. Clemson University still honors the name of well-known slave owners and pro-slavery politician John C. Calhoun on its building signs and in the name of its honors program. I felt this oppressive figure during my time at Clemson and purposely did not mention the university's name for NFL games because of it. I'm joining the voices of the students and faculty who have restarted this petition to rename the Calhoun Honors College. I urge all Clemson students, football players, and alumni to join us so the next generation can be proud of the school they graduate from. Now is the time for change. Please help us by signing and sharing this petition. So he posted the petition. So both Hopkins and Watkins, former teammates with the Houston Texans before Hopkins was traded during the offseason to the Arizona Cardinals, tweeted a link to change.org petition that demands for Clemson the removal of John C. Calhoun's name from our most distinguished athletic program. From this distinguished academic program. The petition says that Clemson University President James P. Clements recently stated that Clemson will not tolerate racism in any form and that Calhoun's words and actions contradict that. Clemson University should not honor slave owner John C. Calhoun in any way, Watson tweeted Monday. His name should be removed from all university property and programming. I am joining the students, faculty, and DeAndre to restart this petition to rename the Calhoun Honors College. Hopkins acknowledged in his Instagram post that seeing Calhoun represented at Clemson has been bothering me for a long time. So, take that shit down. Take that shit down. But remember, that doesn't end racism. That just makes it more covert. Clemson has to start. Clemson and the whole United States, we got to start this bitch over. You cannot clean dishes in a dirty sink. You got to clean the sink out. Until America starts over, because there has to be equal redistribution of wealth, resources, education, all the things that gave white people an advantage has to be done away with where there's no advantages. And everybody's truly equal. We all have an equal playing field, equal playing, and we don't have any discrimination. There's no room to oppress because you don't have the resources to oppress. But until that happens, I'm saying people full of shit. Now, I understand there's a process, but hey, until that happens, people are full of shit. So, furthering Clemson, Dabo Swinney and his other coaches some bullshit because Dabo Swinney trying to cover up for his coach using the word nigger. Okay, and this happened years ago and it's just not coming out. So, Clemson coach Dabo Swinney, and Dabo does support white supremacy. He says he ain't racist, but Dabo do some white supremacy supporting shit. Clemson coach Dabo Swinney on Monday defended his response to an assistant coach's use of a racial slur during the practice 3 years ago. Read that again. Clemson coach Dabo Swinney on Monday defended his response to an assistant coach's use of a racial slur during the practice 3 years ago. Nearly a week after assistant coach Danny Pierman apologized for using the slur, Swinney made his first public comments about what happened in a taped message posted on the team's website. Swinney said former tight end DJ Greenlee and Perriman were in a separate part of the practice field when an argument happened in 2017. Greenlee told the state newspaper, "Me and Coach got into it, and I was speaking with one of my teammates. He heard me use the N-word basically tried to correct me by saying the N-word back." So from my understanding, he was like, I missed that block on that nigga or something like that. The coach was like, "You don't say that you missed that block on that nigga." But coach, even when you're correcting a child, if a child says fuck, you don't say fuck, you're gonna say you don't use that word. And that coach should have did that. So that coach took the advantage of the opportunity to use the word nigga towards a black person. Swinney said Greenlee approached him privately to discuss what happened. According to Swinney, Perriman was profusely apologetic. In a statement last week, Perriman said he made a grave mistake when he repeated the word to try to stop it from being used on the practice field. Couldn't get the word practice field out. I would fire a coach immediately if he called the player an N-word. No questions asked, Swinney said. That did not happen. Absolutely did not happen. It has not happened. Coach Perriman was correcting DJ, and another player was talking to DJ, or DJ was yelling at a player, and DJ said something he probably shouldn't have said. Well, you can't tell a black person that he can't say the word nigger. I blocked the wrong fucking nigger. So that's what Perriman said. I mean, not Coach Perriman, but the player said, "I blocked the wrong fucking nigger." And Coach Perriman thought he was saying it to him, and he got mad. How, bitch? You white. And he wasn't blocking you. That's a fucking lie. You're a white coach who wasn't being blocked. So how do you figure that the player was talking to you when you're a white coach who wasn't being blocked? It had nothing to do with you. You was in a conversation with a player, and he said, I blocked the wrong fucking nigga. But, bitch, you know he wasn't talking to you because he wasn't blocking you. And you ain't black. What did you talk about? So the coach is saying, hey, I was correcting him and saying him, he shouldn't say I was blocking the wrong fucking nigga. But you said blocking the wrong fucking nigga and trying to tell him not to say blocking the wrong fucking nigga, but you say blocking the wrong fucking nigga. So we don't say blocking the wrong fucking nigga. And he repeated it. He shouldn't have done that. There's no excuse for even saying that, but there's a big difference. He did not call someone the N-word. White people, don't fucking say the word. You can't even say it in context. What's wrong with y'all? He shouldn't have said it. And Dabo, you trying to defend it, this bullshit. And then Dabo, not too long ago, wore his Police Matters shirt. He wore a Police Matters shirt and said that it's something he did unconsciously, and it wasn't a shot at Black Lives Matter. It was. Excuse me. It didn't say Police Matters. It said Football Matters. It said Football Matters, which is a spinoff of Black Lives Matter. And so nobody puts that shirt on that don't understand what they're doing. When people put shirts on that have messages on them, they know exactly what they're doing. They purposely did. So Dabo, not only are you taking subliminal digs or undercover shots at the Black Lives Matter movement, which I'm sure he's pro-cop, but you're defending a coach who shouldn't be throwing the word nigger around at practice. And then you go try to tell a black person, a black player, that he shouldn't be saying the word. Bitch, you shouldn't be saying the word. The coach shouldn't be saying the word. You can't tell a black person they can't say the word, nigga. You might not like it, but hell, your ancestors shouldn't fucking create the word and create the fucking niggas and create the conditioning and the conditions for the word to still exist today. Don't create niggas. Don't create an environment for the word nigga to exist. Don't create niggas. You don't have to worry about the word nigger still existing. But you white people don't have, though, you white people don't have a problem with the word nigga, especially that especially the benefits that you get from niggas them existing. White people don't have a problem with that. White people never have a problem benefiting from shit. But they have a problem being called out and being made to look bad for being white supremacists or supporting white supremacists. Dabo, I'm not saying you racist, Dabo. I'm just saying you do some racist shit. That's all I'm saying, Dabo. You might not be a racist, Dabo, but you do a lot of racist shit. So what that mean, Dabo? Dabo said Dabo ain't racist, but Dabo do racist shit. That's funny. That's hilarious. Dabo ain't racist, but Dabo do racist shit, and Dabo defend racism. All right, Dabo, you funny as hell, man. Now the problem with this is, this all gonna fly over, and Dabo, the shit with Dabo and all this stuff gonna be forgotten. And all this momentum that's built up now for the Black Lives Matter protest, I hope it continues, but history tells us it fades out. Because one thing that we already see from these protests is the narrative is already changing from Black Lives Matter and the police brutality that black people face to the police brutality that all people face. And that's not what we're marching. You white people who went out there to these protests to protest Black Lives Matter and police violence against black people knew good and hell well what you was going to face when it comes to the opposition. You knew goddamn well what you was going to face. But the narrative and the focus is still Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. Police violence against black people. Police violence against black people. We will not allow anybody to change the narrative. That's how we can focus on shit like this with Dabo and not let it get away. But shit like Dabo gonna go up on the world once the narrative changes from police brutality against black people to police brutality against all people. But Dabo, Come on, bro. You can't be doing that, man. You can't be doing that. Like, as a coach who talks about zero tolerance for racism and racist acts and racist rhetoric, you sure doing some racist shit. You sure doing some shit that's not in support of black people and Black Lives Matter. And these movements to eradicate white supremacy. So, hey, I mean, all right, man. All I'm saying, Dabo, is I see you, I hear you, and I'm calling you out. And your coach shouldn't have said the word nigga. Coach Perryman, you shouldn't have said the word nigga. You fucked up. You fucked up. You shouldn't have said it. The player can say it, but you can't say it. Well, I was just correcting him. No, bitch. No. No. You fucked up. You used the word that you shouldn't have used, and here we are at this crossroad. So now we see you. Now we see you, because you do use the word nigga, huh? So how often you use the word nigga, Coach Perry? How often you use the word nigga, Dabo? Things we want to know. But that's what happened. These are things that are happening in the state of Carolina and at the Clemson University. University of Clemson, whatever. So that's what's going on, man. That's why I still say I'm side-eyeing the hell out of everybody and everything until we get some real change, some real movement. Until we get that, I'm side-eyeing the shit out of everybody. And y'all white people can keep y'all weak-ass apologies, too. Don't be sorry because you got fucking caught. Like Cat Williams told girls in Friday After Next, don't be sorry, ho. Be careful. White America. Don't be sorry, ho. Be careful. It's time for my weekly rant. And this ain't straight at weak ass racist rally. Racist rally. Loser ass. Racist rally. You a loser. So NASCAR bans the Confederate flag. Fans get upset, but most importantly, a driver with no wins says he's retiring. Bye, motherfucker. Bye. When NASCAR announced that it would be banning the flying of the Confederate flag at races, one little-known driver decided that this season would be his last. One little-known driver. And what's funny is NASCAR tweeted, buddy, and was like, hey, man, we really had to Google you to see who you was. We didn't know who you was. That's how insignificant you is. We didn't even know who you was. But one question before we get to it. NASCAR, why were you allowing the Confederate flag to be flown? As has been stated many times throughout the week, throughout these programs, throughout these shows, the Confederate flag is unpatriotic. The Confederacy wanted to end the United States. They fought to end the United States. And people say, well, it's a part of our heritage, part of all these things, a part of treasonous heritage that wanted to overtake the United States to expand slavery. So I'm just saying, Ray Cicerelli, a part-time driver of the NASCAR Grandeur RV and Outdoors Truck Series, spoke out against NASCAR's decision in a widely read Facebook post on Wednesday, saying he would return after the 2020 races, saying he wouldn't return after the 2020 racing season is over, citing the company's decision to ban the flag. Bye. Well, it's been a fun ride and a dream come true. But if this is the direction NASCAR is headed, we will not participate after the 2020 season is over. I don't believe in kneeling during anthem or taking people right to fly whatever flag they love, Cicerelli, a 50-year-old, wrote on Facebook. And we don't believe in taking away your right to leave, bitch. Bye. Take your loser ass on. You don't have no wins. You are nobody in NASCAR. Well, we didn't even know what fucking division you was in. Motherfucker, we didn't even know your bitch ass was alive. And you got a nerve to to speak up and speak out, because they said that they're going to ban the fucking treasonous flag that goes against everything the fucking United States says they fucking stand for? Are you serious? And you mad because motherfuckers are taking a public stand against racism? Because Cincinnati is like, if you kneel during the national anthem, then you wrong. And if you can't fly the Confederate flag, you wrong. You have, so Cincinnati is saying, we should continue to promote racism and white supremacy in America because that shit make his racist ass feel good. Cicerelli, you ain't even good enough to be a fucking racist. Cicerelli, you ain't even good enough for white America to even fucking claim you. You ain't even good enough to, you're not even good enough to fucking have a voice. The fuck is you talking about, cracker ass cracker? Bitch, get a win. Get a win. Get a fucking high pole finish. Bitch, at least come in second place one time in your life. Or you start making fucking demands and talking about, you're going to buy, bitch? Man, they say they got thousands of people willing to take your spot. Right, Cicerelli, I don't drive. I don't even fucking know how to drive like that. And I can go out there and beat you right now. I drive a fucking Toyota Corolla right now, and I go out there and dust your ass, Ray Cicerelli. You was a bitch. Ray added, I can care less about the Confederate flag, but there are people that do, and it doesn't make them a racist. And you are all, and all you are doing is fucking one group to cater to another. And I ain't spending the money so we can participate in any political BS, so everything is for sale. Bye, bitch. So you don't care about the flag, but you're taking this bitch ass stand. Bitch, stop lying. You do care about the flag. You care gravely about the flag. That's why you're taking this fuck ass stand that you're taking this bitch ass stand. Oh, don't remove the flag. They removing the flag. Oh, I'm hurt. They removing the flag. You know what? I'm not going to race no more. If they're going to move the flag, then I ain't going to race no more because I'm racist and really, and my opinion count. Bitch, racist and really, yo, you can jump off a cliff sucking dick. Don't nobody give a fuck about you. Racist really, you could have died. Nobody would have cared. No. That's how insignificant you are, racist and really. You a bitch. And don't nobody give a fuck about you or your life. You can take your car, your truck, and everything that you got pertaining to NASCAR in your life and shove it up your ass. Do the world a favor, racist Israeli. Pull your bottom lip over your head and fucking swallow. Take a cyanide pill. We don't give a fuck about you, racist Israeli. Fuck you and the racism that you trying to defend. How about that, bitch? So, neither Cicerelli nor his team, CMI Motorsports, responded to a request for comment from CNN. A PR person previously listed as a contact for CMI said she was no longer with the company. The company's Twitter account was deleted sometime between Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Previously, it said Cicerelli was due to return to the driver's seat in the number 83 CMI properties. Osage contracted Chevy at the Homestead Miami Speedway this weekend, but Fox Sports reported that Alan Cavana retweeted Cicerelli had withdrawn from the event. Peace. NASCAR banned the Confederate flag from the events 2 days after Bubba Wallace, the only full-time African-American driver in NASCAR's Cup Series, went on CNN on Monday night and called for its removal. No one should feel uncomfortable when they come to a NASCAR race. It starts with Confederate flags. Wallace told CNN Don Lemon, get them out of there. They have no place in there. The Confederate flag shouldn't be flown anywhere in America anyway. Them bitches lost. The motherfuckers was trying to expand slavery, further divide the United States, and them motherfuckers went to war to maintain slavery and white, and their brand of white supremacy, and the motherfuckers lost. So anywhere in America that flies the Confederate flag, your ass ain't no fucking true American then, huh? Only fake ass patriots fly Confederate flags. And the fact that they had them on military bases is fucking ridiculous. That shows you how ingrained racism is in this bitch ass country. People keep talking about America is the greatest country. America ain't the greatest shit. We just so happen to fucking live here. While it's Wallace raced in an all-black car. Bubba Wallace raced in an all-black car on Wednesday with the words hashtag Black Lives Matter on it and wore a t-shirt that says I Can't Breathe on it in honor of George Floyd, the man killed in Minneapolis on May 25th by some bitch-ass police officer, which sparked nationwide unrest and protests in cities across the U.S. Thousands have marched to call for an end to racial discrimination and police brutality, and we want our fucking end and equal redistribution of wealth and resources. The presence of the Confederate flag at NASCAR events runs contrary to our commitment to providing a welcoming and inclusive environment for all fans and competitors at our industry, NASCAR said in a statement before its race Wednesday night in Martinsville, Virginia. Bringing people together around a love for racing and the community that it creates is what makes our fans and sports special. The display of the Confederate flag will be prohibited from all NASCAR events and properties. So, racist Arelli, you a bitch. So racist Arelli, he was born in January. Damn! Can we move that nigga to March? Racist Arelli, born in January in Ellicott City, Maryland. If you are watching the video, it's what the white boy looked like. Looked like a bitch. So, Racist Arelli has been racing since 2006. So in 2006, he had three of 11 races with 0 wins, 0 top 5 finishes, 0 top 10 finishes, 0 pole finishes. He led 0 races. He led 0 laps. And he was ranked 35, and I'm guessing 35 out of 35. So 2014, he did 3 of 20 races. He had 0 wins, 0 top 5 finishes, 0 top 10 finishes, 0 poles, led zero laps, earned nothing, ranked 44. 2015, 2 of 20 races, 0 wins, 0 top 5 finishes, 0 top 10 finishes, 0 poles, led 0 races, earned nothing, ranked number 90. 2016, 3 of 20 races, 0 wins, 0 top 5, 0 top 20, 0 top 10, 0 poles, led 0 laps, 0 earnings, ranked 74. You see a pattern I'm getting at? 2017, 2 of 20 races, 0 wins, 0 top 5, 0 top 10, 0 poles, 0 leads, 0 earnings. 2017, 6 races, 0 wins, 0 top 5, 0 top 10, 0 poles, led 0 laps, 0 earnings, ranked 38. 2018, 0 wins, 0 top 5, 0 top 10, 0 poles, 0 leads, 0 earnings. 2019, 9 races, 0 wins, 0 top 5, 0 top 10, 0 poles, 0 leads, 0 earnings. 2020, he raced 1 race in 2020, 0 wins, 0 top 5, 0 top 10, 0 poles. Racist Arelli, you fucking suck. So you can take your attitude, your racist mindset, your racist beliefs, your racist behavior, and all the other racist motherfuckers with you, you're losing attitude, you're losing life, you're losing ways, you're losing family, and everything about you, take it and shove it up your racist ass and get the fuck out, because nobody needs you, nobody wants you, and you ain't good at life anyway. You suck at fucking life. Your fucking life is a fucking joke. You suck. You ain't shit, racist, really. You a bunch of bullshit. You a ball of bullshit. You suck. And the world of NASCAR and the world period don't need you. Change your attitude or pull your bottom lip over your head and swallow. How about you stick your head up your ass and squeeze? Because we don't need that bullshit from you. And anybody else who support white supremacy and racism, you can stick your heads up your ass and squeeze. Because we don't fucking need you. Hey, man, this is the Fix Sports Podcast, episode 17. I'm your homeboy, Joseph Ward. Remember, you can see this video. Patreon.com/TheFix. All the people who just listening to the audio, remember, Patreon.com/TheFix, where you can listen, where you can get the full video. And you can support your boy on Patreon. All my patrons on Patreon, shout out to you all. I appreciate everybody who supports your homeboy. And remember, our website is www.freedomtrainradio.com, man. The realest, blackest, funniest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life, brought to you by Joseph Ward. So with that being said, man, with that being said, remember, racism is still real. Racism, the system of white supremacy and racism is very adaptable. It's been adapting over these years and will continue to adapt. And until people work to shut it down completely and start this bitch over with an equal redistribution of wealth, resources, and everything else that gave white America the advantages it has, until that happens, you ain't serious about ending racism in this country. You're just trying to help us find a comfortable place within white supremacy, and that's not what we're fighting for. We're fighting for an end to white supremacy and racism, even in sports, because a lot of people try to say, well, racism don't exist in sports. Bitch, yes, it do. I just told you about racism already. Look at what Richie Incognito did in his locker room. Racism exists in individual and team sports. And just because you can play 20 years in the sport, still be a racist. So keep your eyes up, keep your eye open, and your ears open, and your mind open. Let's do this, man. Fix Sports Podcast. We're up out of here. Freedom Train Network. Radio, baby. Black power. Black power. Black power.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. Ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best.